Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Tarot International. The Tarot trainers are experts in helping you and your business to achieve, lead, and outclass in every situation. Learn more at tero.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful you're listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. With me is a fellow by the name of Luke Moorhauser, and he is with the law firm McKee, Voorhees & Cies, which is celebrating their 100th anniversary. Now, they are located in Des Moines, but get this, and this is very important. This is a national, international story, if you will, and we just thank Luke for spending some time on a snowy day in January to visit with us. Luke, welcome to the Business News Hour. Grateful that you're with us today.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me on here. Look forward to it.
Yeah, this is quite the story. Back in 1924, a fellow by the name of Talbert Dick began a patent law practice, and that has grown substantially through all kinds of things. You're a managing partner there at MVS. Tell us a little bit about that history.
Yeah, so Talbert Dick, we haven't been able to confirm if he was the first registered patent attorney in Iowa, but if not, he was one of the first and, started a practice, and it's very interesting. We found multiple patents that he either had written for people, patent applications that he'd written, and also some that he was an inventor as well. And so It's kind of neat looking back. He was doing both inventing stuff and helping inventors get their protection for their inventions. So that was the, interesting thing that we found doing some of the history on this of the firm. And, like I said, he was in practice for a while. He sold his practice in the 1960s to a fellow by the name of Don Zarley, who then brought on Bruce McKee to join. And those two really kind of took the firm to the next level and made it into what it is today. And, Bruce would actually still practice up until, I think it was just a year or two ago, is when he finally retired. So we really had this connecting person there for a really long time. And just taking it from starting out with the patent practice, and now we do all kinds of intellectual property. So it's patents are still a major factor of us, but we trademarks, copyrights, litigation, trade secrets, a lot of licensing work. We handle it all for our clients.
Yes, and in 160 countries. I think that's what's amazing about this story, is because it's such a specialized practice. You would be able to serve clients all over. And as you indicated, it's federally.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Yes, it's one of the things that's kind of fun about it. And what really drew me to the practice as well is, I'm licensed in Iowa for being a lawyer, but then I'm also registered through the United States Patent and Trademark Office. There's a separate registration to be a patent attorney through them. And so that allows us to practice nationally, for sure. I can probably represent clients in any of the states for patent matters. It's a really global economy anymore. Mm-hmm. We have clients that want the protection around the world. And so we work with law firms all around the world and trying to get our clients protections in their countries. And then there is a lot of reciprocity as well, to where there's clients that we represent in those countries. And when they want to file and get protection in the U.S. as well.
Sure. Let's talk about legal challenges for just a moment. Are there lots of copyright infringement issues that rear their heads?
Copyrights, there's a lot of issues that come up, yes. And it's a common question that we receive from people wanting to use either a snippet of music or a clip of some programming. And the question is always, how much can I use without being in trouble? And, unfortunately, there's no black letter, use less than X and you'll be safe. It really does matter. There's a lot of factors that go into it. And so it's one of those things that get frustrating for clients is because they come to us expecting us to know this answer. And it's like, how much risk are you willing to take on is our biggest answer, our best answer, because you don't know. There's some copyright holders that are very protective. And if you use just a little bit, they say that's enough to try to get you to stop. And others might be a little bit more lenient or just may not find it. It's one of the interesting caveats of all IP law is it is self-police. There's no body out there that is monitoring this for you, whether it's a patent, whether it's a copyright, trademark, it is up to the owner to really go out there and monitor to see if someone is using their rights, and then they have to decide whether to pursue that or not.
And oftentimes, in our experience, what happens is someone issues a cease and desist, and generally, I believe, generally people go along with that. Would that be accurate, or do they take it to court?
It's, you know, there's still, I tell people a lot, if someone gets a letter, whether cease and desist or otherwise, from the legal letterhead, most times the reaction is to just stop.
Right.
Now, you'll have 1 out of 10, maybe even more often than that, that want to push it, and we'll challenge that. But it's, you know, a lot of it comes to cost analysis. You know, it's if I stop this, how much money am I going to lose versus how much money is it going to cost to challenge this? And a lot of times that becomes almost a Pyrrhic victory, because you spend more money fighting it. And even if you win, it's like, how much money did you spend to do that? And so I think that is, to your point, that is a big reason people just say, okay, maybe I'll just stop and see what's going, what else I can do.
Our guest is Luke Moorhauser. He is a managing partner with McKee, Voorhees, and Cease, celebrating their 100th anniversary in 2024, started back in 1924, intellectual property. One of the things that's reared its head over the past year is artificial intelligence. There's a lot of stuff going on with AI, where New York Times, other newspapers, other scholastic individuals are now, well, they're filing suits because AI is utilizing their property to create stories, etc. How troublesome is this?
It's interesting, I will say, from a legal nerd perspective, in a way, because it's the reaction I understand of people wanting to get that to stop. There is a lot of unknown, though, of how these machine learning and artificial intelligence, are utilizing this information. Because if they're using it to train, is different than copying and almost regurgitating publishing. You know, those are kind of two different things. And there's a lot of us in the legal industry that think if it's just purely using for train, that's not really copying for a commercial purpose. So is it really an infringement or not? And I think there's just a lot of unknown because this really hasn't come up in the past. And so that is, it's a very interesting aspect, and you're seeing it a lot. I think a lot of, there's a lot of good in AI, and I think there's a lot of benefit that you can use for that, use it as a tool to help you. But there is still some risk about how much do you really believe it, and what do you use it for?
Right. Luke, what about, and I see that you're in the mechanical electrical practice group, but I'm sure that you have colleagues that you visit with all over the place. Going on is CES, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And that is where it's a B2B event where developers and people come together. Are you working with some of those folks that take part in CES?
Myself, I do not think I have any clients that are there. I'm sure there are some in the firm that are working with, some of the clients that might be out there, though. As you said, we're, one of the nice things about our firm, I think one of the things that's helped us get to 100 years is the diversity of our technological backgrounds. As you mentioned, I'm mechanical engineering background. I counted the other day, I think we have 5 or 6 different engineering disciplines that people have. We have biology, chemistry, a pharmacy background. So you're absolutely right. We have such a diversity of technology that we do work with that it's allowed us to handle a lot of different clients.
Well, what's really amazing about this is many of you folks not only have a law degree, but you're also degreed in engineering and science and medicine, which is quite remarkable.
Yeah, and that's, one of the interesting aspects of patent law. I mentioned earlier about being registered through the patent office. You refer to it as a patent bar, much like a legal bar exam. To qualify to be able to sit for that, you need a science background. And so engineering, if you graduate with a degree in engineering, that automatically counts, many of the science degrees, as I mentioned, biology, chemistry, physics that will qualify to you. So it is an upper level to where you need that first science background to be able to be qualified as a patent attorney.
Right. One of the things that we always like to ask about whenever we have a business professional on with us is hot topics. What are the hot topics that you're seeing or that you've seen over the past years, maybe post-pandemic? What kinds of things have reared their head post-pandemic or even during the pandemic?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple ones. As you mentioned, AI is a big one that we're seeing now, and how it's being used, whether it can be considered an author, a contributor, an inventor. One that I think is really on the precipice, and I made it, you know, my legal prophecy for this year is non-competes and how, and, you know, there's a lot of interplay with those in IP, and we get a lot of questions on those, but I came across a I can't remember if it's an article or presentation recently, but there's a great breakdown that I have. You know, all they're state law driven right now, so there's so many states that have their own rules for non-competes, whether they allow them at all. There, you know, it's Minnesota, California. I know for sure, and there might be some others that just said that they're illegal altogether. And then you get states like Illinois and Colorado to where it depends on how your level of it's salary based or title based. And then you get into states like Iowa and Nebraska, which are on opposite ends, where Iowa is a blue pen state to where courts will go in and actually edit non-competes if they don't like what they say to make them allowable. Whereas Nebraska, it's what we call a red pen state, where if there's one clause in that is they think it's pushed too far, it automatically validates it altogether. And so, especially post-pandemic, you saw a lot of And you still continue to see a lot of moving employees. You know, some of it was driven just by, hey, I don't want to live. If I found out I could work remote, so I'm going to move, or else I just want to take a different job based on everything that was going on, COVID and thereafter. And so that's becoming a big issue. And especially talking to a lot of non-legal colleagues, engineering firms, architecture firms, especially IT firms, you're seeing this more and more of people wanting to control where their employees may work down the road and getting a lot of pushback. And then, just last year, President Biden, his big push is to have a national law that gets rid of non-competes altogether. And so there's a lot of moving parts on that, and I think that's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Wow. Non-competes are it's an interesting thing. When you talk about this post-pandemic world that we are, we just had a news story the other day about the empty office buildings that are in major cities, all just because people are working from home, or increasingly, but because the buildings that were built in the 1980s are no longer attractive to the types of businesses that would occupy them. It's a fascinating story. And being in commercial real estate right now would be just a killer, I would think.
Yes, I agree. And, talking to a few realtors recently at some events, and the ones that can get people to fill their spaces are definitely happy about it. But I think you're right. I think there's still a lot out there and a lot of questions about what it's going to look like in near and long-term future.
You mentioned Nebraska just a little bit ago, and the governor there wanted everybody back in the office in state offices like yesterday. And he's getting pushback from the union there saying, I don't think we're going to do this so quickly. So there's so many issues around work today. And it's fascinating to watch. Our guest is Luke Moorhauser. He is with McKee, Voorhees and Cies, a patent attorney's office, celebrating 100 years and working in 160 countries. Let's peek into the future for just a moment, Luke. What do you see coming up? Are we going to continue the AI conversation? What do you see in the future? You're celebrating 100 years and through all kinds of things, through the Berlin Wall, the 9/11 attacks, the pandemic, 17 presidents. I mean, this is a history that's fantastic, actually. But as you peek into the future as a young guy, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on the first thing, looking in the past, just the resiliency of our firm to make it through all of those changes. There's been, you know, patent law changes. And you know, one of the things I do think that it's, it, you know, coming up next is there's going to be more rules and laws around patents specifically. There's been some, there were the last big law change was in 2012, 2013, the American Invents Act. And that there's some people that have not liked how that played out. And so there's a lot of discussion in, you know, the patent world about what this looks like and trying to make sure that, you know, we go back to having a strong patent system that people have confidence in so that they want to get patent protection because they understand that it will provide that level of protection for their inventions so that it's dual based in terms of it's justifying their cost to go into this innovation. And then it's ensuring the fact that when they have some protection that they are able to keep others from stepping on their toes during the life of their protection. So that is, you know, something that's, it's kind of simmering and it's probably not real publicly known just because it is a little bit niche in the patent world, but sure. I do think that is something that's, it's really coming up. And then, you know, that ties into all of the questions on, you know, and a lot of the software stuff and a lot of the pharmacy stuff is, you know, those are the big drivers for a lot of this. And on some different sides of things, you know, the Googles and the Amazons and the different pharmaceutical companies, they're trying to balance that and trying to make sure that we're balancing the big companies with the startups and right. the people that are trying to become the next level of companies to be able to have that protection as well.
I was visiting with our Secretary of State in the state of Iowa not long ago, and he was talking about the amazing number of LLCs that have been created in the past 2 years. It is astounding. And people talk about the work-life balance. Many individuals who were required to go back to the office have said, screw it, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to start my own business. And it's been really remarkable. Final question for you. And this deals with overseas competition. Now, you're in 160 different countries, which is amazing, by the way. But there's a lot of talk about the Chinese economy, which is kind of tanked over the past couple of years. And they're used to, you know, double-digit GDP growth. And now they're in the single digits and everybody's freaking out. What about overseas competition as it relates to U.S. companies? Are there further concerns about who's getting what and if they're stealing things?
Oh, 100%. That's usually one of the first questions I get is how is this going to protect? And especially in the mechanical, I see a lot more, you know, widgets, let's call it. It's, you can see tangible things as opposed to some of my colleagues mm-hmm. who are working in the chemistry or the biology fields. And a lot of that is if I start selling this, what I have protected, how is that? How am I going to be able to stop someone from China or anywhere else from just knocking it off and selling it? And, you know, it's assuring them, at least in the U.S., a patent in the U.S. protects or gives you the ability to prevent others from making, using, selling, or importing into the U.S. And that's the key one that I always tell people is that if you get this patent protection, there's methodologies through the ITC, the, you know, the Trade Commission, to be able to stop at the importation levels mm-hmm. of and you've seen this. I mean, the Apple Watch is a big one that right. you probably heard about this recently, to where that they did have a lot of products get seized because of patent issues. So there's, you know, that side of things from the U.S. and trying to protect that side. Going into the other countries, it's tough, and we have a lot. This is probably the most difficult questions is. You know, I hate to use the word worth, but is it worth protecting in some of these countries? Because again, self-policing, are you going to go, are you right. going to, you know, it's different if you have a location already, if you have a plant in China or Germany or somewhere to where you can monitor what's going on over there. But if you're a US-based company that, yes, you might sell in one of these foreign countries, are you going to go over there and really monitor and track down everyone and then hire local counsel to get that? And some companies are saying, yes, that is important enough to me that we want to make sure that we have that protection, that we have that ability to stop, no matter what that looks like. But you're right. I mean, it's, you know, I use the anecdote a lot in China, just that you mentioned them. It's a bit of a whack-a-mole issue over there.
Yes.
I mean, you go after a company that might be knocking off your protection And well, what happens a lot of times is they just dissolve and then start up as a new entity, and you're just constantly chasing. And so that is an issue. And so it does drive some people from protecting in China. But then, like I said, we have some clients that have facilities in China and others, and they just said we need to make sure that we at least have that appearance, and we're going to make that effort to try to enforce there.
I am so familiar with that. I have a very, very expensive watch, Gucci, as a matter of fact, that I bought when I was in Taiwan for $10. So,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the bigger issue is, or one issue that I have a local agricultural implement manufacturer, and they're just kind of getting, they have some work in China, and they actually had one of their major products be attempted to be knocked off in China. And what they found out is that the Chinese entities that were copying them were using less than desirable composition for the manufacturer, and so it wasn't working. And so part of that issue then becomes, okay, they weren't so worried about them taking market value, but then the other side is the tarnishment of the company name.
Right.
And so that's the other thing that people sometimes forget about. It's not just stopping someone because they might be infringing and copying it. It's really about the reputation of you and being able to stop, because you don't want a less than stellar product being sold. To your point, your Gucci watch has been stopped after 5 minutes, and you went to Gucci and said, Gucci doesn't make good products because you bought this product. You know, they're going to say, hold on, that's not us, right? And it's the reputational aspect of things that are important as well.
Wow. Interesting and fascinating conversation with you, Luke. Thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. We will share this far and wide. And congratulations on 100 years of service to the communities across many, many disciplines. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
That, once again, is the voice of Luke Moorhauser. He is a managing partner with McKee, Voorhees, and Snees. They do intellectual property. I don't know about you, but I was geeking out on that conversation. I found it most, most interesting. And yes, we will have links to their website up on the radio blog. Well, that's a wrap for today. Thanks so very much for joining us, for all of us that put this together each and every day. Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator, sales and marketing, Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, produced, and directed by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Luke Moorhauser, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a great day. Be safe. Be well. Be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.